When you hear that trumpet, you know that this is the Dr. Larry Show on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network. I'm your host, Dr. Larry Fedewa, and tonight we are talking about the foreign policy of the Trump administration. And my first remarks have to do with my own work on this subject. I usually talk about trying to understand our rather enigmatic president. But I think in terms of not only the foreign policy, but actually everything he does, he is basically a deal maker. And he laid all this out in a book many years ago called The Art of the Deal. I think if the so-called fake media would ever take the trouble to read the book, they probably would have a better idea of exactly how he works. But there are a number of steps that he takes when it comes to trying to do a deal. And the first one is that he analyzes very carefully what it is he wants, and then what the opposition wants, and then what is the worst possible outcome for them. The second step is he then announces that he's thinking about this problem, and he talks about the worst possible outcome that might be in sight. And at this time, our friendly news folks just take him very literally. They all get all excited, and they just think that this must be the most terrible thing and the end of the world. But the opposition also, so they play really right into his strategy. The opposition then gets very alarmed, and they want to talk. And so he finally agrees to talk to them, and then he showers the opposition with praise. Oh, they are just such wonderful people, and I have a very close relationship with them. So then when the actual talks take place, he puts on the table a far less troublesome alternative than the one that he is taking. Actually, we're having a little trouble getting our guest on the line here. we may have to interrupt things for a moment to try to get him the proper information. Then when he comes to trying to actually make the deal, he puts out a far less onerous option, and the guys are obviously very happy about that, and so that means that he does. Excuse me, I'm trying to reroute our guest here as I talk, and I'm finding I'm not a very good dual tracker here. So anyway. So that's the approach that I have been taking, and I find that people are panicking very unnecessarily, frankly, because they think that this is a crazy man, and that he keeps flipping and he keeps changing all his initial positions. And we have a guest tonight. He is James S. Gilmore III, and he is the former governor of the state of Virginia, governor from 1998 to 2002. And during that time, he also became the chairman of the so-called Gilmore Commission, in which they were trying to figure out how to protect America from terrorism. And of course, right during that time, the 9/11 attack occurred, which brought Governor Gilmore to even more prominence. Since then, he's been very active. He was a presidential candidate for the presidential nomination in 2016. And he is also the chairman, president, and CEO of the American Opportunity Foundation, which is a very broad-based interest organization. And, well, we really appreciate your coming on and sharing with us. I've been very impressed with the broad range of topics that your organization is commenting on and also that you are writing about. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the American Opportunity Foundation before we get started?
Sure. The American Opportunity Foundation is the current name for an organization that is called the Free Congress Foundation. So we call it American Opportunity Free Congress Foundation. It's a conservative policy organization. It's been around for many, many years, several decades. It was put together by Paul Weyrich about 30 years ago. When Paul passed away, the board asked me to come in and revitalize it and spend some time with it. I have been doing that. Our principal goal over the last 10 years has been a tax reform for economic growth, because we believe that the high unemployment, low growth, low wages was a national emergency. Of course, the Congress has acted on that after 10 years, and we're seeing some good results on that. And then the other piece is, of course, foreign policy. I've written several pieces on that. Your listeners can access that at AmericanOpportunity.org. I've written six articles on foreign policy. We also have a guest person who's writing on some China policy. And we have a cybersecurity article that we have just put on the webpage, and we're sending this out to people. So we would hope that people would come in, sign up, and become a part of our organization. One more thing, we've also spent a great deal of time on transportation from the conservative point of view. In fact, we're the only conservative organization that's ever talked about public transportation or transportation generally. So these are policy areas that we've been pursuing for quite a long time, Larry.
We want to get into that, but first, this is the Dr. Larry Show on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
Now you can increase your yields by using Conklin's Guardian slow-release nitrogen additive. Guardian holds your nitrogen in the root zone where it's needed over a longer period of time. That, in return, can reduce your nitrogen rates. That saves you money. And whether you want it in a dry or liquid formula, Guardian helps in reducing groundwater contamination, too. So save your money and be a good steward all at the same time by using Conklin's Guardian.
You're listening to the Dr. Larry Show on the Bachelor Pad Network. Jim, I was very interested in your approach to foreign policy because you started with the national security strategy, and really that document and the interpretation that you're able to give it makes it sound, it shows that the Trump administration is really has a very well thought out total strategy for virtually everything they're doing. And would you mind getting us started on telling, first of all, what exactly is the NSS?
Larry, I sure will. I think that for your listeners, it really needs to be focused on is the real change that we've seen in approach. The left-wing media is just simply condemning everything that the president does in the strongest possible terms because a new approach is something that is jarring and something they're not used to. Historically, the United States has been a sort of liberal international type of country where we focus mostly on alliances. We sacrifice some of the interests of the American people in return for a stronger alliance. Trade deals, which have not necessarily been favorable to the United States, but once again, in order to keep our allies strong and the international order strong. The president came in and changed this around, and the principal focus is he's focusing on America first. Now, I don't believe that means, Larry, America alone, but it does mean that he's going to start looking after the people of the United States as his most important priority. That's why he's changed many of the trade deals. That's why he pulled out of the Iran deal. And that's why he's established a new national security policy. And your folks can go on Google, of course, and access the president's national security strategy. But it's in four pieces. Number one, protect the homeland. And as you know, Larry, I chaired the National Commission on Terrorism for 3 years back in the late 90s and early 2000s. And then second, promote American prosperity, which is to rejuvenate the American economy and to stop trade abuses against the people of the United States. And once again, I remind you that our nonprofit has been focused on that for almost a decade. The third pillar is preserving peace through strength, and that means building back up the United States military and making sure that we have strength so that we can conduct our foreign policy with strength. And then lastly, the fourth pillar is to advancing our influence. And that means that we champion our values, we seek partnerships with other sovereign states, we work together with multilateral organizations to protect the American interests and to enhance our influence overseas. So those are the four pillars of the national security strategy that the president has put forward. But the most important change is the fact that he believes, and we believe, in sovereign countries within the international system, not countries that are going to surrender their sovereignty to international organizations or international concepts of unified multicultural things, but independent nations that are strong, that can be good partners and allies with the United States.
Well, I'd like to take some time and really focus on each of those four pillars, because frankly, once you do that, you're really talking about virtually the entire scope of the federal government of the United States of America. So, and I know you've written extensively on all these issues, and so we'd just like to pick your brain a little bit, Jim, and start talking. Maybe start talking about the protect the homeland that's a very comprehensive concept as you explain it.
Well, I think this is why you see so much emphasis, particularly on the southern border, and the president trying to control the southern border instead of just letting anybody come across the border in violation of American law. But he's really focused a lot on the dangers of weapons of mass destruction to the United States, to bio threats, to violations of the immigration laws, to the dangers of jihadist terrorists and criminal organizations. So, again, once again, we have a Department of Homeland Security. I would suggest that your listeners may want to read some of the reports that I chaired, of the organization I chaired, the commission I chaired, back in 1998 through 2002. We actually did a 5-year commission during that time, and it overlapped the 9/11 attack. And you can find that on the webpage in the RAND Corporation, rand.org, and you put in Gilmore Commission, and you could look at those 5 reports. But our focus and the president's focus in pillar number one is the protection of the homeland and keeping our people secure in a time of insecurity and international terrorism.
And that includes cyber as well as the wall and the protection of the borders. And that whole cyber field is one that seems to me to be very neglected. I think one of the interesting aspects of the situation that we're in is that 80% of the infrastructure in the United States is privately owned rather than government owned. And I guess that should make it easier or harder depending on the company. But what are we doing to try to bring all of that under some kind of protective shield?
Well, first of all, we do have to be concerned about the potential invasion of our computer systems by an enemy. If you can, in fact, cut off the computers and cut off the Internet and stop people from using, for example, their cell phones or the Internet, imagine each of your listeners, I'm sure every one of your listeners has a cell phone. Imagine if suddenly you couldn't use it. Imagine if suddenly you couldn't go onto the internet and in order to order things or to look at things or to learn about your information. Well, it would set us back 30 years. So we do have to be protective about this, and we do have firewalls being built, and we do have the federal government thinking about it, and that's certainly a part of Pillar 1 of the National Security Strategy. In fact, I spent some time on it in a seminar today that was actually headed up by CACI Incorporated, CACI. They did a national seminar on cybersecurity today and pointed out these dangers and the fact that that shaping public opinion through the internet by an evil adversary is something that we have to be alert to. So this is a whole new field, Larry, and your listeners, I'm sure, will want to read a lot more about this.
Well, one of the things that I've been, you know, I've done a little bit of work in this area myself, and one of the things that I've been taunting some of my cybersecurity friends about is it possible or is there even some rational approach to the idea that Ronald Reagan had when he gave us when he started talking about Star Wars as a shield to protect us from intercontinental missiles, and everybody thought he was crazy, and it turned out he really wasn't crazy. Is there any movement or is there any possibility of doing something along those lines to protect America's electronic and cyber communications?
Well, I can assure you that the Department of Homeland Security and most of the contracting community has been talked to by the federal government. And the systems are being put into place right now in order to try to protect our infrastructure. But this is very new. And it's very challenging. As you can see, people are invading the internet all the time, and it isn't just adversaries. It's vandals, it's hoodlums, it's
right.
Organized crime, gangsters, it's people who are committing fraud, people who are just vandals. They just want to plant a bug into your computer by asking you to open up a link. So a lot of this is going to be that we want to have more and more education of the American people about what cyber really is. At the end of the day, I think that if an informed citizenry understands these dangers, then it will tamp down some of those dangers in and of itself.
Yeah. I think we have a question from one of our regulars here. Reggie, do you have a question?
Yes. Can you hear me okay, sir?
I can.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, first of all, Governor Gilmore, Richmond, Virginia here, sir. And
excellent.
I had the opportunity to meet you back in the day and when you had a chance to do one of your seminars at WRVA at the radio station. Mm-hmm. We shook hands, and I voted for you. Matter of fact, you remember the great debate that you had in the Democratic representative, former Governor Wilder said, and I quote, that he thought that both individuals would make an excellent governor for the state of Virginia. And that was kind of like a backhand endorsement of you, sir. So, you know, I'm a Virginian. So, you know, Doc, no, I keep it 100. But, you know, yes, you know, I got something, Governor Gilmore. Here in the state of Virginia, you did everything you could to bring diversity to the Republican Party, and they fought you every step of the way. Now, when I see this individual, I call him 45. I'm sorry, but I don't respect him at all. But my opinion, sir, why is it that the Republican Party, in my opinion, again, seem to have a problem with diversity in their party?
Well, let me, Reg, thank you very much for the call. First of all, Doug Wilder, Governor Wilder, and I have become fast friends over the years. We see eye to eye on a wide variety of issues, and we like each other personally, which is pretty unusual for former governors, I might add. But Governor Wilder and I are kind of pals. And second of all, you're quite right, Reggie. My goal as a Republican when I was running for governor and when I was elected governor was to try to bring all the communities in together. And that's why when I was the attorney general, and there was a lot of arson against African-American churches, that I brought Republicans and Democrats together in Washington, D.C. Doug Wilder came up to that conference, and we put a strong statement out that we would not tolerate attacks on African-American churches, and then those attacks stopped. And then when I was governor, I made a point of really favoring the traditional African-American colleges because of the emphasis the community was putting on education. Also, did a lot of work in K through 12 education as governor. And then finally, I would say to you now that that what we're seeing under the Trump administration is an effort to try to build the economy up. And what that does is that gets everybody jobs, not just people in the community, but the entire community gets opportunities that maybe we haven't had in the past. But, Reggie, I appreciate what you've said. My goal has always been to bring all the communities together, and I've lived up to that, particularly by cutting the car taxes, I'm sure you know. And you're right, by the way. I was fought all the way, not only by the Democrats. I was fought against by the Republicans. So I'm kind of used to it at this point.
And this is the Dr. Larry Show on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
Required listening with Amazon Music.
Dad music again?
The greatest guitarist of all time.
Wait, who?
Alexa, add this song to a new playlist.
Sure, what's the new playlist name?
Jack's Intro to Classic Rock.
Adding Stepping Stone by Jimi Hendrix to Jack's Intro to Classic Rock playlist.
Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you and soon he will love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at AmazonMusic.com. Renews automatically, cancel anytime.
So you're listening to the Dr. Larry Show on Bachelor Pad Radio Network, and we're talking to Governor Jim Gilmore, who has been not only an outstanding Virginia politician, but who has also expanded his horizons and his interests and his influence throughout the country, and I'm very pleased that you have joined us, Jim. We've got a lot of controversy about the current president. Reggie kind of alluded to that. I have found that I think that a lot of the animus, I guess you'd say, against the man really is partly from his I thought at first it was mainly his manner and he's kind of by appearance and by style he's a prototypical what they call the white male power player. But really now I think it's more than that. I think it's really what you were talking about, and that is that he wants to change the whole mystique of that we're operating under here. The paradigm is shifting, and there are just an awful lot of people, including the deep state, that are terribly threatened by that.
Well, the president's very bold. I'll say that. And sure, he ruffles a lot of feathers because he does and says things that are countercultural. That you know, he's expected to be nice and polite, and that just ain't him all the time. He's trying to shake things up and to be bold. And I must say, I haven't noticed that he's backed off any from all the criticism that he's gotten. But in the meanwhile, he said that he wanted to do something to build up the economy. We here at AmericanOpportunity.org have been advocating that for many years, and he did it. He went into the Congress, and working with the congressional Republican leadership, he got the tax cut passed. The result now is, by the way, wages are starting to go up.
Yeah.
I might say that there are people in the community, for example, that haven't gotten a raise in 10 years. And all through the President Obama's years, wages went nowhere. They were stagnant. Growth was nowhere. And now I think things are starting to pick up, and the wages are starting to go up, and people are getting better job opportunities. And that's true for everybody. So and then on foreign policy, it's true. It's absolutely true. He's placed his emphasis more on independent sovereign nations than he has on some international order where the people of the United States are expected to give and sacrifice for the world order. I think his position is that if the United States has real friends and allies, that we need to be real friends and allies, and not just simply depend upon the taxpayer of the United States to pay for everything. But this requires a shakeup. and he's been pretty bold, I must say, pretty strong.
What do you think? Do you have any ideas about how we would try to reconcile the big city Democrats? I mean, we've got the two coasts on sort of fighting everybody else, and they have a, there's a lot of the not only the political power, but of course a lot of the communications and industrial power as well. Do you have any thoughts about what we can do about that?
My own view.
Just being successful, I guess maybe that's the only thing.
Well, my own view is that you have to appeal to people as people, and address the concerns that they've got. The left wanted to nationalize health care and have more or less succeeded in doing that. But while we do like the preconditions requirements, it says that if you have preconditions, you get covered no matter what. That's good law. But the baby got thrown out with the bathwater. In order to get that, you basically nationalize most all of health insurance. And the free market doesn't really apply anymore. So the point is that I think you have to appeal to people on the basis of good health, economics, good jobs, raising wages, and national security at a time of great danger. And, Larry, we are in danger. The international community is coming to pieces. And the United States has got to recognize that we're in a war. We really are in a war. I've often said to people, well, we're in a war. We're just not in a shooting war. Then all of a sudden it occurs to me, well, we are in a shooting war all the way across the world, everything from terrorism to Afghanistan to the dangers in Ukraine and the Middle East. It's things are coming to pieces, and United States strength is going to be required in order to keep our people safe.
I think that's quite a statement. We do have, I guess, flash wars or whatever, small wars, I guess, is what they call them. But so you're saying that you think we're on the verge of a world war?
No, what I'm saying is that we're in a constant conflict right now. And the Russians and the Chinese are revisionist powers. They don't like the international system as it presently exists today. And they're pushing as hard as they can to try to revise that and change that. Russia wants to dominate Europe. China wants to push the United States out into the Pacific and dominate East Asia.
Right.
These are very dangerous things. We don't have to have a world war. But if the United States is weak, then I think we're inviting a war, and I think we've got to prevent that.
And you feel that the peace through strength is that's the way we won the Cold War. I guess that's probably still the best way.
It certainly is. The United States has to rebuild its power, but it isn't just military power. It's also economic power.
Right.
We are the strongest and largest economy in the world, and we have to stay that way.
So what should we be working on? What's the next? If we look at the NSS, and the last part is the strengthening of the international alliances and organizations, and I think we're seeing that. He's really shaken things up. I guess the one thing that really is kind of sticking in the craw of a lot of conservatives is that our national debt is on the verge of increasing rather than decreasing, although today he's started to work on that too. I took the position in a recent column that I thought there was possibly a strategic approach that he's been taking, namely that we had to get the economy up because you cannot starve yourself out of a recession, and then you also have to get our trade and our economic power back, and as well as our military power. And when you're really riding high, you're strong economically, militarily, and politically. That is the time when you start trying to figure out how to cut costs. I was really feeling that was kind of an act of faith until today, because now he's talking about that 5% decrease in every department of government. That I assume that you're probably pretty sharp on the numbers on these things. I'm not, but I feel that that is a real threat, that a $21 trillion national debt is a real threat.
Well, I think that it is, because as interest rates go up, then of course our payments
right.
to the bondholders go up, and you know, right. bondholders aren't just people on Wall Street. It's you know, people who own bonds and buy and invest
sure.
in the United States generally.
Right.
So it's a legitimate concern. But we also have an international emergency, which means we have to spend more money on our defense. We've been starving it for years, and we
right.
can't do it anymore. It's creating a real danger to the people of the United States because of the push we're seeing from Russia and China and Iran, and now, of course, this North Korean challenge that we're facing, which I've written on extensively. So we have to do those things. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure we can cut our way out of the problem. I think there's only one answer, and it's to grow the economy. So for many, many years now, we've been growing at 0% or 1%. And basically with 1% inflation, it means that the American people were getting
right.
nothing, not advancing. Well, now I think we're beginning to see a stepped-up growth. I think that's going to help everybody, and it's also going to create more revenue. So it's pretty important that our accounting be straight, and we understand that enhanced revenue goes against the tax cut and tries to lead itself towards some kind
yeah,
of balance.
Exactly. We're still on the Dr. Larry Show on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network.
There's a difference between do-it-yourself and do-it-for-a-living. At The Home Depot, we get that. And we're here to help pros get the whole job done better and faster. Get the lowest price on the things you need with bulk and volume pricing. Then get it all where you need it and when with buy online, pick up in store, or job site delivery with text notifications. You save time and money. When you've got a job, we're on the job. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing.
What's your favorite project right now?
Well, I do a lot of things, Larry.
I know you do.
my primary focus is on trying to advance policy through the American Opportunity Foundation, AmericanOpportunity.org. Your listeners can go on and look on that webpage and see the various things that we're promoting. And then I conduct a lot of business. As I said, I serve on public boards, and I keep my hand in politics. I'm doing a lot of different activities right now. But the principal focus right now is to try to help the United States in the best way that I can. I've always tried to do that as Attorney General, as Governor. I even ran for President, which didn't work, but I don't regret it one minute. It was a great experience and a great contribution, I think, to public service to run for President. I'm at a variety of these kinds of issues right now, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
What is the but your you also have these your program to influence the policy is not only the writing, but it's also some public appearances and seminars and other sorts of those sorts of things, is it not?
It was, and we used to be doing a great deal on public transportation through active public seminars. Right now, I think that the main emphasis has got to be on asking really good experts to participate with our writing, and we're starting to do more and more of that. We do have a lady who is of Chinese ancestry who has pointed out the dangers of Chinese influence in the United States, and then I asked her also to write something on the draconian totalitarian measures within China, which she
yeah.
has done. We have a major executive writing on cybersecurity. But the main focus I've got is economic growth, which is exactly President Trump's goal, and it's, by the way, one of his main pillars of the national security strategy.
Exactly.
Pillar two, and then also, of course, on foreign policy, which I've written on extensively.
What do you feel about some of the? I don't want to ask you questions that you don't want to answer, but we've got some real problems here with this Mueller business and the conflict between the Congress and the Department of Justice, among other conflicts of that sort. Do you have any position on any of that?
None other than, You know, the law is the law. I've always felt that way as Attorney General. I was a prosecutor, an elected prosecutor, and, of course, as governor. And I believe the law has to be adhered to. I think that at this point, we're probably entitled to some report from Mr. Mueller as to what he's found out. A lot of time has passed. This is a direct attack on the presidency and on the people around the administration. And I think that we need to know pretty soon now what he's got or he doesn't have. And there's such a thing as a beginning to get kind of a creepy feeling that it's sort of a star chamber. It's, you know, no prosecutor wants to advertise his investigations in the press. Nobody wants to do that. I didn't do it when I was Commonwealth's attorney. I didn't advertise what I was doing. But after a while, when it becomes widely, publicly known that there's an investigation of the president and it's all kept secret, at that point, at some point, the public is entitled to say, well, you know, these people all work for us and we're entitled to know what they're really doing. And I haven't heard anything for over a year.
Well, today they made the announcement that they were going to issue a report, but they didn't. It was not going to be released to the public. And it was right after the midterm election. Seems kind of ominous.
Well, whatever the report is, if it's issued to our elected representatives, then they can decide what they want to do. But at some point, the public has to have some confidence that the reports and the investigations are being overseen by somebody, and our elected officials will do just fine.
Yeah, but they're talking about that they're the only reporting they have to do is to the acting attorney general, who seems to me to be a bit questionable in himself. That whole thing just does not have a good smell to it, frankly, in my opinion. Well, so where do you think the midterms are going to go?
Well, I don't know much more than what the polling is showing. This is an off-year election. Usually the out party, which in this case is the Democrats, would gain. That's pretty normal. In this instance, we just don't know whether they're going to have enough votes to take over the House of Representatives or not. There's been a bit of a turn recently, I think, because of the Kavanaugh fiasco, because of the wild attacks on Justice Kavanaugh. I think that the more conservative voters have become a little more motivated. But we don't know yet. On the other hand, I feel pretty confident that the Republicans are going to hold the United States Senate. And I just think the numbers are there for the Republicans to hold the Senate. But I think the most important thing to think about is how we can really draw people together. You know, people in the African-American community have a stake in this country. And I think that it's wrong to begin to develop a culture in this country that's based strictly on race and gender and hate. I think these are things that we just can't have. And the far left has been promoting just these kinds of tribalisms, that these interest group type of approaches that I think are unhealthy. I think instead we've got to recognize that all Americans have a commitment to their jobs, to their opportunities, to their wages, to their families, and to their security, both in their streets and in their international relations of this country, their military. And I think that we can find a lot of common ground in this country if we really work at it.
But who's working at it? That seems to be, I don't see anybody, maybe, what is the name, Kanye or, you know, but I don't see anybody really out there. I mean, we had, you know, when, I think of Martin Luther King as a guy that was, he was preaching that we ought to have integration, and that really was the final answer to our racial problem, and he was hoping that he would see the day when that was, when his children were judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. But we really don't have any of that anymore, do we?
Well, you know, in my personal relations with people, I have not found a lot of anger. I've found a lot of friendliness everywhere. But then when you get over into the appeal for the votes, it just seems like there's an effort to divide people and to build up as much anger as possible. But I'm not seeing it when I get around and talk to people. People are nice to me. Of course, I've got a long track record of getting along with a lot of people. But
well, you're a nice guy, Jim.
That's what everybody says, Larry. You know. But I think that once again, there is common ground in this country, and I think we have to recognize that, and we have to communicate better that we're trying to actually promote the interests of everybody. But I think that while I believe that the Democrats may win the House of Representatives, it's not so certain now because, you know, people are tired of the fighting in the streets. People are tired of these extreme statements that are being made. There's a lot of really high-pitched extremism going on that I think the American people are tired of in every community. Look, as long as we adhere to the Constitution and the law, America will always come through, Larry. I promise you that.
Well, of course, the Constitution is under attack also. I believe that that's the basis for a lot of the far left, not even far left, I guess, the Democrat objection to getting Kavanaugh and his ilk. They just really don't believe that an 18th century document ought to be still running the United States of America.
Well, if you read history, you recognize how really awful things were up until Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Continental Congress adopted it, and we declared independence. That was a noble document, which was a clean break from the past and the monarchies and the cruelties. We're seeing it emerge again right now. I guess if I had one thing that I would say that may be of value to your listeners today, we need to recognize that we are in a worldwide conflict. The Russians and the Chinese believe that authoritarianism is the way of the future. Take the Chinese, for example. They believe that managing people, managing their populations, controlling their populations is the best way to go. And they want to compare that to the American democracy. Well, as long as you can create as much chaos as possible in the American democracy and in the American society, we don't look as good as to other people around the world as the calm, collected Chinese. But the truth is that authoritarianism and cruelty and kidnapping and taking people and throwing them into cells and torturing them and listening to them, what they're doing over the phone. This is not the way of the future, Larry, and this is a conflict we must win. And we will win, I believe. I'm very confident about the future because of the nature of America.
Well, we're not, the people of the world are not being fooled, I don't think. I mean, we don't find people having caravans trying to get into China. They're all trying to get in here. And what we have done historically and also in contemporary life, I think, is a proof, ought to be enough proof for the budding socialists that what we have in our, what I call the democratic capitalism, is really been able to develop a society that is really the beacon to the rest of the world. And So I certainly agree with that, but there are people that don't agree with it. There are people that are very, very staunchly opposed to the idea of the Electoral College, for example, or the fact that we have two senators from every single state, no matter how small they are. There are people that are trying to change things dramatically. And
well, Larry, my concern is that, listen, when I came up in politics, there wasn't but one party in Virginia, and it was the Democratic Party. It was a holdover from the Civil War, and the Democrats controlled everything. And my goal was to bring a two-party democracy to Virginia, and I really think I made a contribution in doing that.
You certainly did, yeah.
But what we're seeing now, I've sort of given up attacking the Democrats, if you want to know the truth. I'm really focused on the far-left element in this country. And right now they're taking over the Democratic Party and using that as their vehicle. But listen to the things that they're saying. The other day, Alec Baldwin came out in a speech and said that we should overthrow the government. And he was quick to say, well, we ought to do it by voting and all that. But he didn't need to use that kind of language because it sounds like he's saying that the overthrow of the government by whatever method is the right thing to do.
Right.
Congresswoman Waters said, let's attack people on the streets and let's attack people in the restaurants and in stores. And so naturally we saw exactly that in Lexington, Virginia, when Sarah Huckabee Sanders was run out of a restaurant. You know, I personally have seen attacks like that, as a matter of fact, in my home community of Richmond. We see people saying, well, the president is not legitimate because he didn't get the popular vote. when in fact our Constitution says that we elect by the Electoral College. So the Electoral College and the Constitution was under attack. And it's true, people don't think we ought to have two senators in each state. Well, if you read history, there would never have been any United States of America if we had not made that the great compromise to have two senators in every state. This, as a matter of fact, my readings say that the representatives from Delaware were very clear. They weren't going to join the United States, and neither was the rest of New England. Because they all were saying, look, New York and Virginia are going to run the whole show based on population, and we're not going to do that. So the compromise was instead to give an equal representation to all the individual states, and America was created. So the point is, you have to read history, you have to stand by the Constitution, and stand by the liberties of the American people. The
interesting thing is that logic still holds. You know, that's exactly what's happening in the Electoral College as well, If we just went by a strict plurality, the whole center of the country would not be represented. So those old fellas, they had their personal faults, I guess, but they certainly knew what they were talking about when it came to compromise.
Well, they kind of had to. If they didn't make a deal, they never would have been in America in the first place. One of my favorite movies is 1776. Sometimes you ought to pull that out and look at it, and your listeners might want to find that too. It's really kind of fun, but it's got a real deep meaning in it. It's a musical, you see.
Yeah.
But I still remember Benjamin Franklin was pleading to John Adams to compromise. He said, "We're just trying to get a country going here." and now, after all these years, we've still got it. But I must say, I'm very nervous about the assault on the institutions of our country. It's not true to say that the Supreme Court is not legitimate, because Kavanaugh was elected to it appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Then you come out and say the Supreme Court doesn't have any legitimacy. That's not an attack on Kavanaugh. That's an attack on the institution of the Supreme Court and the Constitution.
Yeah.
So I think that we all have to reaffirm the importance of sticking with our Constitution and our laws. If we do that, all these political things back and forth will fade away, as long as we're together on the fundamentals.
Well, and also, if we're in a prosperity as opposed to penury, because when you look back at the history of the Depression, and you see how close we actually came in certain situations to revolts and to tipping over. I mean, the Soviet Union was the great nirvana of the early Roosevelt years, and so we've come through a lot. And I agree with you very much that what we've gone through is probably at least as bad as what we're facing now, and I don't think we should get discouraged. So, Jim, we really enjoyed having you come and talk with us. Do you want to say any parting words?
The only parting words that I would say is that everybody ought to keep their chin up. I was a soldier assigned to Germany during the Cold War, and the Russians were really in control of half of Europe. The dangers are still there in Asia, but we're really in pretty good shape internationally. We just have a lot of conflict that we have to address. And right now, we're seeing a rise of the American economy, and everybody is being looked after in the best way that we can. So I'm optimistic. I'm confident. We have a lot of challenges and a lot of things that we have to address, but I'm very confident in the future of our country.
Well, if you ever run for anything else, give me a call.
Just get out your fat checkbook, Larry.
Because, well, you're the kind of guy that we need in public service, and I'm very privileged to know you, and I thank you for coming on with us tonight and sharing with us your many years of experience and wisdom, and we will see you at the next Veterans Affair, where we usually seems like we meet. And listening to the Dr. Larry Show on the Bastropad Network. If you missed any of the shows, you can pick us up on the Bastropad Network. Good night.